98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
A lot of guys want it. A lot of guys want to be good, want to be special, want to do something special. And once you got that, you just got to continue to just make the days count.
It won't go for Smith, but he gets the rebound back to Bridges for three. Shazam! Chris Paul setting things up out on top. Ayton, he'll try a three. Shazam!
We play for each other, and we don't matter who scores. Just going out there, playing as a unit, playing with positivity, and it's all fun.
I mean, I'm greedy. I'll take everything.
Doug and Wolf talk Suns. Now.
Boy, where do you start this weekend? An overtime loss on Friday, a double overtime loss on Saturday, and plenty of things to be critical of from the Suns' standpoint, if you're looking at it from a coaching standpoint, from a player execution standpoint. Lots to talk about. Good morning. It's Doug and Wolf in the Auction Community Studios. Suns lose 130-126. Friday night, 120-112 on Saturday night. Denver hasn't been playing great basketball, but they're still Denver. And, yeah, and they were still very, very close to possibly making noise and going all the way to an NBA Finals in the bubble last year. So you know that they're good.
Yes.
And Jokic proved once again. I keep doing that. Joker or Jokic. It's one or the other.
Okay.
And I keep combining them and saying Jokic. But Jokic, 31 points, 10 boards, 8 assists on Friday, 29 and 22 rebounds on Saturday.
Yeah.
But for me, these are losses where I handle it. I question a lot of the decisions, timeouts, not to foul, things like that. But there's also still a chemistry issue between Booker and Chris Paul.
Yes, there is.
And there's still a question of, I think this is a little difficult for Monty to accept, but the ball needs to be in Booker's hands at the end of the game. And that sounds ridiculous when you have a legendary point guard.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want Booker to be an option on the last play or so of a game. I want Booker to be the option. And the way to make that happen is put the ball in his hands. And that's what's kind of tough. And the reason why I'm not overly concerned is because I think time heals everything that's wrong with end of game execution.
Yeah, I love that right there. And that really has been the problem for the Phoenix Suns,
yes,
as well. The crunch time minutes right now, they're a mess. More on this as the show unfolds. But I just don't want to overreact to what I've seen so far. The Suns are 8-7 right now. I don't want to lose it. I don't want to cue the band to play Near to the Oh God. I don't, Basinonians. The Suns have talent, and they've got a lot of new faces as well. I'm not making excuses either. I'm just trying to look for a reason as to why we've seen them struggle at points. And we have seen them struggle to get the chemistry going. I totally agree with you, Doug Lease. They're learning how to play with the talent and the new faces. At some point in time, this was going to happen. They got off to a 6-2 start, and all of a sudden, oh my goodness, it was like, I think we all know what's going on here, and I think this is what we expected. I still expect that out of them. I expect them to win and play well, but they followed that up with a 2-5 start. They went 6-2 and then 2-5. They followed that up with 2-5. So right now, I think they're somewhere in the middle of that.
Mm-hmm.
6-2 start and a 2-5 follow-up. They're somewhere in the middle of that.
And you look at, like, let's take an example of what happened yesterday. If you didn't see it, this is the, sometimes I get confused when it's regulation, overtime, double overtime, but I believe it was at the end of the regulation, Suns up by three. I'm going to make up a score here, like 95-98. And they give up a three, and you have to wonder, there's an old, a lot of coaches still debate this to this day. Do you foul at the end of the game and put them on the free throw line for two free throws when you're up by three?
Mm-hmm.
Logically, the answer is a no-brainer. Yes, here's the problem. What if referees call it a shooting foul and now you've just put Murray on the line for three free throws?
Right.
And the NBA did a great job of putting horrible officials on the floor for Saturday night's game. So you've got to be worried sick if you're Monty Williams. If I foul with terrible officials, what are they going to do about it? And yet he said,
that was the plan, is to foul him. And because DA had five, worried about getting six. And so I totally, you know, as a team, we understand that, but the goal was to foul. And you know, the only thing I could think of in hindsight was not to have him in the game, but he's one of our best defenders. And he just hit an unreal shot. But again, I thought he challenged, he traveled, but that's something that, you know, we'll look at as a squad and as a team and grow from. But I'm going to talk to the league about that, because if you're going to go back and look at it, then you should see that he took more than two steps. It looked like he took four. And so if we're going to try to get it right, then we need to look at it in context and get it right. So, but to your point, yes.
Point one.
The NBA admitted it.
Yes. Point one, the NBA has got to change the rule. You get unlimited challenges until you're wrong. And as soon as you're wrong, it's over. That's it. You never get another one. Because there was a terrible call earlier in the game. The Suns challenged and had used their challenge, and it was over.
No.
And now they don't get another. Why? Yeah. The referee screwed up. Why should I lose my challenge? Because you're bad.
I endorse that.
Well, they couldn't challenge it. Then you have the travel, which was apparent. You should have been able to challenge that. And then there's a conversation with DA, and I admit, the way DA is playing, and especially with Jokic on the other side, I don't know what the right decision is. I still think DeAndre should have fouled. You could tell they said, that's the plan, foul, and you're going to lose DeAndre Ayton if he fouls. I thought in this game, in both games actually, I kind of wish Monty would have changed up his defense, because the only guy that was actually defending Jokic reasonably well was DA. And I was tired of the switching every screen. What happened when we were younger when you actually fought over a screen? You didn't just go, oh, I got screened, so I have to switch.
Yeah.
How about actually staying with your guy and saying, you know what, we're not going to switch. We're not going to have DA leave Jokic at any time, because he was the only one that did well. Yeah. When Jokic had the ball against anybody else, it was death.
It's just death. What, 80 points in the paint? Was it 80
that
points?
That was Friday.
That
yeah.
was Friday.
Oh, my gosh, that
Friday's
was crazy.
Game, 80 points in the paint. Oh, my goodness. Abandon all hope, ye who enter here. That was really, really difficult to watch that. And right now, Monty Williams says this, Basin Onions. He says that it takes 20 games for him to determine what kind of team he thinks he has.
I don't think you could wait that long in this year.
You know, honestly, we've seen 15 games
right.
so far, right? We've seen 15 games from the Suns right now. What do you know? What do we know about this team right now after 15 games? They're prone to giving up leads.
Mm-hmm.
That much we do know. That's one thing right there. They got to figure that out. They're streaky from three,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes flat-out struggle from three. And when they do that, they struggle to score.
If I can focus on that point for a second, I think what they really do a poor job of is they think they can shoot themselves out of a slump. Booker is the only true pure shooter on the team. So, Bridges, you're a really good three-point shooter when you're going, but if it's not going in, don't say, well, the next one will. Get to the rim. And too often when this team isn't shooting the three well, they just say, well, I know what the problem is. I need to shoot it again.
Yeah.
No, get the ball to the hole. Get your rhythm going.
To that point.
Then start shooting threes again.
To that point right there, they stink at getting to the line.
Yes.
They're one
yes.
of the worst teams at getting to the line. Yet what's interesting about that is they're number two in free throw percentage. Number two in the NBA. At some point in time, you got to get to the line.
That would help. And those stats are based on, like you said, the year, and we've only had a small sample size of the new DeAndre Ayton. Maybe they'll get to the free throw line as a team more often if they can get into the penalty sooner. To your point, last night, the Nuggets picked up their fourth. This is a little like technical. It might be a little boring, but hopefully I can make it entertaining for you to listen. 3.5 minutes to go in the game, Denver picked up their fourth foul. And yet, the Suns never shot a bonus free throw at the end of regulation.
Yeah.
They never picked up another foul on Denver in the last
Saturday
three.
Night.
Yes, on the okay. last 3.5 minutes. You've got to get yourself to the free throw line there.
Right.
And the team put you there, and you didn't get it done. That was a big mistake, and that's when you've got to attack. But like I said, is this a concern that they have to get fixed? Absolutely.
Yeah, they've got a lot of stuff
but
to fix.
I'm not worried about the end of game, because I think you learn that over time and they'll get better.
I totally agree.
Coming up next, Tom Brady. He is and forever will be the greatest quarterback of all time. But should we remove the word quarterback? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. You can imagine, and I don't think this is just media-driven. This is a no-brainer. Topic number one of Super Bowl 55. And I think even more so than the stat everybody knows, no team has ever hosted a Super Bowl in their building, and now the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will be doing just that. That will be a storyline. But I think the number one storyline that won't be that will never get trumped in these 2 weeks is the fact that Tom Brady is the greatest of all time at quarterback, and he left the greatest of all time at head coach, and he got to the Super Bowl, and the head coach didn't get to the playoffs. I like a tweet the show got, a little bit earlier from Eric, and he says, respectfully, gentlemen. I thought, okay, that means I'm about ready to disagree with you, but okay. Respectfully. You cannot compare Brady and Belichick this year. Both inherited very different teams. And that is true. Now, I stare down the Patriots and say, you've been wasting a lot of time trying to get good receivers, and Brady's so good he's made it work all these years, and that's on you, and Bill Belichick's in charge of that. But I still say, when you see the position of the two franchises right now, doesn't that put the onus on Bill Belichick to do something Bill Belichick has never done? And ask a question to a player, what do you want to be happy?
Yeah, listen, I say this, Eric, tongue-in-cheek as I talk about these two guys because I consider them to be the greatest of all time at their respective jobs. Mm-hmm. Talking about Bill Belichick as a coach and Tom Brady as a quarterback. There's an old argument that exists in the National Football League that players are what win games. Players, players, players win games. And Bill Belichick will tell you that it's players, to his credit. Players win games, and coaches lose games. There's an old adage, an old saying in the National Football League that everyone adheres to for the most part. And, of course, that was a huge topic. Who's going to win? Who's going to prove that they're right, Brady or Belichick? So I said that tongue-in-cheek a little bit. The fact that Brady, it looks like Brady won that argument. Players win games.
Tom, what about you? What about the risk you took in becoming a Buck?
Well, this is the ultimate team sport. And, we've had a lot of people work really hard over a course of a period of time to get to this point. So, it's a tough journey to get here. So to go on the road and win another road playoff game is just a great achievement. And, now home Super Bowl for the first time in NFL history, I think puts a lot of cool things in perspective. Anytime you're the first time doing something, it's usually a pretty good thing.
Good job deflecting, but come on.
What do you mean?
I mean, I appreciate that he's trying to deflect. It's a team game and everything else. But what we're seeing, I mean, I it's hard for me to believe if you grew up in the 1920s and 30s, you really knew what you had in Babe Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to believe that when different people have said, I'm seeing the greatest, I kind of knew it even though I wasn't a Bulls fan, when you really saw Jordan. But I mean this in all seriousness. Who would you rather have, Brady or Jordan? I don't care that I'm switching sports.
Oh, boy.
We're talking about a guy that represents 20% of your starting five versus a player of 1 of 11 in Tom Brady. And yet, look at his impact on the game. You heard the stats from Mike Greenberg last week. A 4-foot putt is missed more often on the PGA Tour than Tom Brady misses championship games. Just appearing. For 21 years in the league, 14 championship games.
He's good.
He's going for ring 7. How happy would you be if your franchise had 7 trips to the Super Bowl? Your franchise.
Yeah.
He's going for his 7th win in the Super Bowl. It is, I mean, it's time to actually look at it and say, is this the greatest player, not in football? And I don't know if I'll convince you of even that over Lawrence Taylor. But is it time to actually ask, is he the greatest player in sports?
Yeah, listen, first of all, with the football question right there, I take quarterbacks, and I've talked about this for decades. But I'll take quarterbacks and I put them in their own category. They're unlike anything else that happens on a football field.
Mm.
They're not a football player, in my opinion. A football player is somebody that deals with the direct impact and tries to deliver impact physically, tries to get it done. Not a quarterback who's going to stand there and not get hit on most plays. Okay, now they do get hit. Don't get me wrong. They do. Okay, but I'm talking about blocking and tackling. If you were to ask an old coach, you know, what is the game of football? What is the game of football? They'd say blocking and tackling. And I would say even to some degree, new coaches, new era coaches would say the same thing. It's still about blocking and tackling. It's just you're doing it a whole lot differently. Does that make sense? It's still a game that is a physical game. It's not as brutal as it once was. There's no denying that. It's a physical game. And because of that, I look at a football player and think, you've got to be able to deal with that physicality. Quarterbacks aren't dealing with that physicality. Do they get hit? Yes, they do. But I see them as just a separate entity when you're talking about football players.
Okay, then I get that. So I'll ask you this. With the number one pick in the all-time NFL draft, are you taking Brady or Lawrence Taylor?
You're going to take a quarterback because you're going to build around that quarterback. It makes it so much easier to build a team. There's no debate on this. There's no debate. I'm not disputing that at all. You take a quarterback because once you got that franchise quarterback, it's so much easier to build a team. So much easier. You don't even have to build it in one correct way around that quarterback. You can build it in multiple ways around that quarterback as long as that quarterback likes what you're doing.
Deshaun Watson.
You can have different identities. You can have different accountabilities, different work ethics, different cultures. You can have it all. It doesn't matter because you've got that guy. There's not one way to build a team. There's not one way. There's multiple ways to build a team, multiple identities that a team could have. But as long as you've got that guy and you're building around that guy, you're good.
Tom, the win and the season of 2020.
Well, it's been a great journey thus far. And, you know, we put the work in, and a lot of guys were just embraced everything that, you know, really when BA got here last year, you know, there was a lot of great things that were happening and a lot of great young players. And, you know, I just loved, you know, made the decision and, you know, love coming to work every day with this group of guys. And they worked really hard to get to this point. And it's a tough game. We've had a few tough games in a row. And the next one will be really tough, too. But we know what we're playing for. And we got 2 weeks to prepare. It's going to be a great opponent. And be really exciting in a couple weeks for us.
Get better at press conferences than this guy.
Yeah.
No matter
yeah.
how many times you ask him about him. It's like, oh, the team did this and BA got here before me and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because there was a learning curve, right? There was a learning curve for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Even when they were winning games, even when they were 6-2, there was still this there was this uneasy feeling that they were not clicking on all cylinders. They had not found themselves. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers will tell you this themselves. They point to the end of November where they actually lost a couple of games. They lost to what? The Rams and the Chiefs, as a matter of fact. They point to the end of November and then going into December when they found themselves, their true identity and what their offense is. And it reminded me of Carson Palmer. We've talked about this before, but it's the truth. Listening to Tom Brady right there, it reminded me of Carson Palmer and how he struggled to get BA's offense down, the terminology, and how the wide receivers struggled as well, and how difficult it was for Carson and how bad he looked, frankly, in that first half.
You just like bringing that up. Because it was the worst opinion I've had in the 14 years of the Duggan Wolf Show.
Well, there might be a little bit of that. No, I just, there was a learning curve with BA's offense. There just is. And there's a lot of evidence for that. And I would say, Exhibit A, point to Tom Brady and how he played in that first half. Wasn't awful by any stretch of the imagination, but there was a learning curve for Bruce. I mean, for Brady.
Sometimes you still wonder because the drop pass. I mean, Brady. Imagine Brady's first half numbers if it wasn't for the drop passes.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a lot of drop passes then, and then the duck and chuck interception by Brady. I didn't like the pass. I think you got to just eat that sack there. But at the same time, Evans, how are you not on his page to see? Boy, he's about ready to get smoked here. I got to find the ball and. I want to put, I don't know what percentage I'm putting on Evans because I don't think you throw that. But if Brady looks at me in the face and says, I thought I could count on Mike fighting for that ball and I wanted to give him a chance, how are you going to argue that?
Mm-hmm.
Coming up next, the Bucs run through Brady. The Chiefs go through Mahomes. What about the Cardinals? Did you see an identity this weekend that you say, I want that for the Arizona Cardinals? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
I'm sorry, I'm cracking myself up there, basically. Especially in a four-way stop. What are you doing, you savage? Just hit your blinker. Do you mind? And come to a full stop. It's so easy when you come to a full stop.
I admit one thing that I'm having trouble with driving, and it's my fault, but I find myself making this mistake a lot. If you are getting ready to turn right on red, do you realize that if a guy is in the left-hand turn lane getting ready to turn what looks like towards your street that you're on, and he does a U-ey, he has the right of way.
Okay.
So he's got a green arrow. He's turning left. You think he's turning onto the street you're on.
Right.
And you're turning right. So you think, oh, I have every right to turn right.
I see.
And then he does a U-ey and he's coming right at you.
Right.
You're the one that's wrong for turning.
Okay.
You've got to let the guy do the U-ey. And I screw that up a lot.
Okay. I think I knew that, Douglas. I'm not saying I execute it well.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, like, I know the rule.
I know I don't have
the right to turn right on
I'm not
red.
I'm shocked by that.
But I do it, and then all of a sudden the guy's looking at me like, oh, yeah, my bad. All right, sorry. Yeah. I wish there was a horn that says, you're an idiot, get out of the way.
It's a guy that drives up to the
we need two
the
horns.
Stop. Drives up to it, and he's rolling that thing. He's rolling. And then he's waving. Wait, rolling and waving at the same. No! Just all you got to do is stop. Just come to a full stop, and we'll fit. Hey, I stop first. I get to. It's maddening. Oh my goodness. Stop rolling and waving.
There's a phrase that was said by Cliff Kingsbury at one point in the year, and it should really scare you.
I'd say we're still looking for it.
And the reason why that should scare you is the question was about the identity of the offense. And it's not a big deal if he says that on Labor Day.
Yeah.
If he says it September 15th, September 30th even, I'm okay with that.
Okay.
He was asked on December 7th about the identity of the offense. December 7th.
I'd say we're still looking for it. You know, I thought we had first half of the season had done some good things and played in rhythm and, had some real positive moments. And starting with a Thursday night game in Seattle, didn't think we executed great.
And then he starts talking about the season, but the one thing that you saw in this postseason and specifically on Sunday was even though two coaches won, two coaches lost, there were four coaches that knew what they're good at, knew what they were trying to set up, and had a general idea what they thought you weren't good at and tried to exploit it, which brings up a scary question. We saw 16 Arizona Cardinals games this year. What are they good at?
Yeah. See, this is something that's really, really important. I'm a big believer in this. I'm a big believer in identity because it's part of culture. Identity, accountability, your work ethic, all of these things come together. This is how we do stuff around here. That's culture overall. That's what I'm talking about. And having an identity, I think, is kind of important for a football player on a football team because it's something you can hang your head on and say, this is what we do. This is who we are. This is what we do. And we do it well. That's what an identity is. And I thought the Arizona Cardinals had a much better identity in 2019 than they had in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that odd to say? After Kyler Murray had a great year, the kind of year he had where he did get into the Pro Bowl along with Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, and you had DeAndre Hopkins as well, that the Cardinals had a better identity in 2019? But they did If you go back and you look at it, 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends. As a matter of fact, in the second half of 2019.
I'll look at it after about the four-week mark when we thought Cliff is embracing an NFL run game. Kenyon Drake looked good. The O-line looked good. Two tight ends looked good. And therefore, Cliff looked good.
It was more balanced run-pass, in particular in the red zone. They became a much better red zone team, and it looked like they were kind of on their way. Now, listen, I don't want to undersell DeAndre Hopkins and the impact of DeAndre Hopkins and what it means for a D-hop to set –
And you should adjust when you've got him.
Absolutely right. To suddenly settle onto your roster, and there he is on the depth chart, one of the best wide receivers in the National Football League. What is he like, and how are we going to get him the ball? I get it. That is a big part of your identity. It just didn't seem like they found a rhythm ever. And I wonder if, in fact, the offensive players felt like, what do we do well? What can we hang our hat on here? I don't know if you could say that, in particular, in the second half of the season.
One thing that, because this really worried me going into this season, I was never alleviated of this concern. I was always worried going into the 2020 season. Did Cliff Kingsbury learn his lesson in 2019 because he adjusted? Or did he change because of personnel and then it was, I still have my philosophy, just give me what I need and I'm going to go right back to it. You never established Larry Fitzgerald as a third down weapon on third and short. You never established him as a red zone weapon. That to me is totally on the coaching staff and or Kyler, but probably both with a little more on Cliff. The falling off of the cliff of, no pun intended, of Christian Kirk during the year. And then simply, as you said, I don't think Cliff Kingsbury believes there are times where it's okay for the world to know what you're doing and just to whoop somebody with it. Just to know, this is what we do. You know what's coming, and you can't stop it.
Love it.
And that never occurs under Cliff Kingsbury. It's always, I'm going to out-scheme you, and I think you need to out-scheme people when you have lesser talent. But when you've got a Kyler Murray, Larry Fitzgerald, DeAndre Hopkins, and what I was hoping for, the running game the last 12 weeks of 2019, you never saw that from Cliff. You never saw him say, this is what we do, you deal with it.
Yeah. Listen, I'm old school, Basin Onions. I really am. And there are some old school plays. That's why this Super Bowl is so fascinating to me. It's so fascinating because you've got the old versus the new. Do you not? Think about that. You got B.A. in the Bash and Bob offense and Tom Brady. Here we go against Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs and that offense. Hey, look, everybody, it's Tyreek Hill. We're going to wave him around wherever you want to do. And what I love about it is the Kansas City Chiefs, they run a base play. How many times you see inside zone? How many times you see a tackle zone? I'm talking about the stretch play as well and then a boot that comes off of it. More under center is what I'd like to see from the Arizona Cardinals going forward. I think a blending of the two. Think of Tom Brady and the Buccaneers offense, and then you think of Patrick Mahomes in the Kansas City Chiefs offense, and a blending of those two things right there. Now, I get it. Tyreek Hill is a scary, scary proposition. Hardman is a scary proposition for a lot of people as well. And he got off to a rough start.
Yeah, he did.
Did he not? Crazy Carl showed up on that play right there where Hardman's throwing the ball all over the place. And yet at the same time, those guys, they show up and they impact the offense. But I think you've got to find an identity. And I think the Cardinals have an offense that could be a lot more towards the Kansas City Chiefs than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You do a lot of different formations, different motions, and run base plays. But you've got to embrace that base play. Do you not, Kelvin Beachum? You've got to embrace the mundane and lining up and saying, we're just going to have to whip somebody. Sometimes that's what you have to do on that tackle zone, that stretch play. Sometimes on the inside zone, you just got to come off the ball. 22 and 23 double. You saw the Buccaneers run this, right? This Bruce Arians.
And it didn't work all that well. No, and they kept doing it.
It's the same thing. It never really works all that well. It doesn't. Especially on a cutback, Leonard Fournette.
I know.
What are you doing?
Run through people.
And yet he scored the touchdown on the cutback. They got to do a better job of being more physical, I think, going forward. That's the identity they got to find.
Coming up next, you don't want to think about it, but he put the thought out there. Is Rodgers headed to the NFC West? Home is where the heart is. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Okay, Wolf has ripped me for years. And I just accepted. I deal with it. Sit here in the Auction Community Studios with him for 14 years, now in season 15.
Season 15.
By the way, speaking of the Auction Community Studios, I hope I don't embarrass myself, but Saturday morning I am playing Southern Dunes with Chairman Robert.
No way.
So when you're with the chairman of the Auction Indian Community, alive, I hope I don't hit somebody else with my tee shot.
Does the chairman use the foot wedge? Does he use that? I mean,
yeah.
Do you know? Hey, Chairman, what are you doing?
I played with him once, and he is one where he doesn't do it in any way form of cheating. It's like, hey, we're just out having a good time. Feel free to drop your ball over here if it's in this bad rough. You don't have to hit it out of that.
Hey, Chairman, what's up with that?
But he feels that way for everybody. So the Chairman Robert does not have a competitive bone in his body. He's the single nicest man I've ever met.
Yes.
So therefore, it's like, why? You don't have to do that to yourself. Why feel pain? Why hit it out of that stuff?
Yes.
He's way too nice about that. I'm the type of person, I want the pain. I want to know what my score is based on how bad I am.
And let me just say, the chairman of the Auction Community based in Orleans, also an excellent lunch guest.
Great
conversationalist.
Totally agree. So that's for me Saturday morning.
Not Hugh Holman, but
yes,
good nonetheless.
I can sense an impromptu power poll coming of top five lunch guests.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
That's coming up.
I listen.
I am totally reading into it. I admit it. Doug goes deep. That usually I say, hey, I'm just right and you don't like it.
Or sometimes I don't listen.
This is a little different. I realize I might be reaching on this, but I'm going to say it anyway because I do feel like it's true.
You talk, I space.
I think Aaron Rodgers, if you judge the body language after the game, it's fair that this is not just speculative talk of his last days as a Packer.
Really?
Now, that doesn't mean logic won't dictate later. Okay, I'm going to say logic might dictate the situation later.
He was down, Douglas, but not out.
A lot of guys' futures that are, uncertain, myself included. That's what's sad about it most. Getting this far, obviously there's going to be an end to it at some point, whether we make it past this one or not. But just the uncertainty is tough and the finality of it all.
Wow. What are you reading into that comment right there?
He
was down in the mouth.
I'm totally reading into it that he is establishing his own authority in the situation.
I see.
Not demanding that he's gone. But I totally believe if you asked him this morning, would you rather be a Packer next year or a 49er? He would say a 49er.
Really? You would bank on it.
Absolutely. I can go home and I can go play for a team that looks like that right now and is one quarterback away, in my opinion, from winning the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Not even getting there, winning the Super Bowl. They're an injury-free season and a quarterback away from winning the Super Bowl. And I can go do that for my hometown team and leave a team that didn't give me a weapon in the first round of the draft and drafted my replacement. I think he's really upset about that, though.
Who was right about that after the season? Does it not seem like the Green Bay Packers?
The Packers' argument is you have enough on offense to get to a Super Bowl. You don't need something.
Yeah.
And they're pretty close to it.
Yeah. I don't know if you could look at the Green Bay Packers as an organization and say, you are wrong, sir. You are wrong to do that. Aaron Rodgers had one of the most incredible I think that's what we're hearing right now.
But you're arguing with me over logic. You're using great logic with a talk show host. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is using logic right now. I don't think this is about how Aaron Rodgers feels, not what is logical. And I think Aaron Rodgers is still that angry about it.
He may be, and I'm sure just after the loss, just looking at him after the loss, we were commenting on the fact that there's the embrace, the quarterback club, there's the embrace at midfield after the game, and the way that Aaron Rodgers barely looked at Tom Brady, barely even acknowledged him. Even as they were walking up and they gave the embrace, he glanced at him once, well, actually twice maybe, glanced at him, but never locked eyes. And I'm sure it's easier for Brady to get up there and stick his face in Aaron Rodgers' face, especially because he's taller than he is. Yeah. Stick his face in there and say, oh, I hope it's okay with you. I hope everything's going to be fine. Way to go. Way to give us a good game. You know, whatever it may be. I get it. I think he's stinging from what happened this year. The fact that he went out and had a quarterback rating of 121.5. Aaron Rodgers was the best quarterback in the National Football League through 17 weeks. The best. And then suddenly, you lose at home in the NFC Championship game.
And
that's why he's hurt.
And your head coach says, I'm going to give the ball to the kicker and not give it to you. That can't sit well. Matt LaFleur, do you want him back?
I sure as hell hope so.
Oh, okay.
I mean, guys, the MVP of this league, he is the heart and soul of our football team. So, hell yeah.
Now, anybody and their mother would trade for Aaron Rodgers right now, unless you've got like Pat Mahomes or somebody special. His salary situation is perfect for the teams that's trading for him.
Okay, he's got three more years left, correct?
He's got 3 years left, but here's the weird catch. None of those 3 years are guaranteed. None of them. There's no guaranteed money left on the deal.
What?
However, here's where it gets painful for you. Here's where it gets painful for the Packers. The Packers have kicked the can down the road on his extension so much that if you cut him, you owe him $0 out of your pocket, but you owe the cap $31.5 million.
Wow.
There's $31.5 million of dead money if you cut him.
Okay.
Because there's that much of signing bonuses that are prorated from the past. But if you keep him, it's a $37 million cap hit. So there's only a $6 million difference. So you get into the argument, okay, it's only a $6 million difference, I got to keep him and play another year with
him.
Or you say, you know what, if I'm going to get out of this deal, it's only $6 million difference. It's going to hurt, but it's not going to hurt to the end.
So
I think it's up to Aaron Rodgers. I think this is Aaron Rodgers making a power play by throwing out my future's in doubt. Because I bet to the Packers before he said that, no, it's not. And now it is.
Is he saying that? I mean, I realize with human nature, based on means that familiarity breeds contempt. I understand that. But are you telling me that Aaron Rodgers, after the year he's had and the career he's had with the Green Bay Packers, is looking to get out? That he wants out, that's it. You're out at Faber.
I think he's threatening in order to get more control himself.
Man.
To make sure, what are you going to do in free agency? I bet he's learned from Brett Favre. Brett Favre's still bitter the Packers didn't sign Randy Moss.
Brett Favre.
Okay? I think this is Aaron Rodgers in a power play basically saying, future's uncertain, and the way to make it certain is to give me what I'm asking
for. That's a great example. I'm glad you brought that up, because if I were a friend of Aaron Rodgers, if I were the agent of Aaron Rodgers, I'd say, remember Brett Favre. And you don't want your career to end the way that it did with Brett Favre.
How ironic is it that they did the same thing? They drafted Aaron Rodgers before Brett Favre was ready to go.
Correct.
Now Rodgers is dealing with the same thing. Do you want, but still, going to the Jets as Brett Favre did. When you think of him as a Viking at the end, you forget he went to the Jets first. That's different than going to the 49ers. Now, would the Packers actually trade him within the conference? I would assume not.
Remember Favre. That's what I would say.
It's really interesting because I don't think you say that.
A lot of guys' futures that are, uncertain, myself included.
I
Yeah, but what is he talking about? Retiring? That's it? It's
maybe,
all over?
Maybe I'll retire if you're not going to give me what I want.
Yeah, I don't know about that. You know what? You just be quiet, Aaron.
I think he's threatening for power. We'll see if they give it to him. Coming up next, Super Bowl 55, Mahomes and Brady. If you didn't hear the incredible stat, they've played four times. They've split both games. Mahomes, 121 points. Brady, 120. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.